Hi there, it's Nick here. Thanks so much for your continued support of the Nick Luck Daily Podcast. Now, I know I've urged you on more than one occasion in the past to check out the racing app. And if you're a fan of US horse racing, as you know I am, never has this been more important, because the US service on the racing app is truly terrific. Not just the cards, very easily accessible for the day's racing, but also the video past performances, which are available completely free of charge, irrespective of any betting accounts, but also available at just one click. It's all there at your fingertips. If you are not resident in the United States and are a massive fan of American racing, this is the place you need to be. The Racing App. Download it today. You're listening to Nick Luck Daily. This edition is brought to you by Timeform, the trusted source of racing data and analysis. By the Racehorse Owners Association. And by the Racing App, in partnership with FitzDares. Good morning, welcome to the show. It is Tuesday the 9th of April. It's a thoroughly foul morning here in TW11, as it is set to be at Aintree today and tomorrow. With more on that and the latest going in Grand National Week on Merseyside, let's check in with Saleka Varma, the clerk of the course.
We're getting some pretty blustery heavy showers blowing through. I'm just looking out the window, the teams are sort of trying to put signage up but having to give up for the time being because of the strong winds. The good news is this the worst of this is due to leave us late afternoon today. Probably I wouldn't be surprised if we get another 10 mil today, which is what we had yesterday. Thankfully yesterday we actually missed the worst of what they were forecasting. Tomorrow we've got some more showers coming in, possibly in the region of 4 to 6 mil. But then once we get to Thursday, Friday, Saturday, there are scattered showers around, so there's not the guarantee that it'll stay completely dry, but it's certainly looking an improved picture from what we've got at the moment.
Ground on the Grand National course, how testing do you think it is going to be come Saturday at 4 o'clock?
I think if we stay largely dry through Thursday, Friday, Saturday, I think we will see some improvement. Once they get past Beechers through Canal Turn and along that canal side of the course, that is the heavy ground at the moment, and I think that will probably remain pretty testing. But bays 1 to 6, so from the Grand National start and down to Beechers, actually can improve quite quickly given the opportunity. My only concern is that the drying weather may see the ground get stickier. And it may therefore still be pretty hard work, even though it might not be quite so wet and deep. So going stick varies from, I think it's 3.4 to 3.6 across the three courses. We have, interestingly, in the last, I'd say, 18 months to 2 years, seen going stick numbers decreasing. And other courses are reporting similar. Not quite sure what the reasoning is for that. So they are low readings, and I certainly think they're representative of the ground we've got. But we do generally seem to have lower readings at Aintree than we would have done in the past, which is something that I've been speaking to Turf Tracks about, because they say other courses are reporting similar. The next readings will be taken this afternoon, evening, and I think we're probably going to see them lower still. We were in the twos in December. And I wouldn't be surprised if we see that again today.
All right, that's Aintree clerk of the course, Saleka Varma. Jane Mangan joins me this morning. Jane, let's start by seeing how that and other factors have impacted the fields for Thursday, which have just been confirmed. What are the key storylines here?
Well, I'm going to begin with the Aintree Bowl, of which there are 7 declared, because I wasn't really expecting Corbett's Cross, the novice, to be declared against Brave Man's Game, Gentleman's Game, Shishkin and Jerry Colomb amongst Ahoy Senor and Thunder Rock. So that's the feel for the bowl. But we are accustomed to Emmett Mullins thinking outside the box. I'm sure his horse will appreciate whatever rain that falls. And instead of sticking to his own waters, he's going to jump in deep with the heavyweights. And I don't know about you, Nick, but he's going to take some beating.
Well, I think it's an interesting and bold call, and I think it's probably the right call as well when you think about the opposition. We know that Shishkin has 2 question marks. form of stable and his own demeanor. Braveman's game's been declared in cheek pieces. I don't necessarily take that as a positive, I don't think. Plus, very deep ground would impinge on his chances, you would think. Certainly would play against Ahoy Senor, who's a course specialist and good ground. He'd be interesting. It's quite hard to fancy a horse like Gentleman's Game off the back of Cheltenham. Thunder Rock doesn't look good enough. And Jerry Colomb, the obvious horse. But how hard a race did he have in the Gold Cup? Is he best fresh? And does he really want very deep ground? So you can see why it's a play for Corbett's Cross, can't you?
Yes, I do think Jerry Colomb will relish conditions as well. I think the biggest question mark for him is how much the Gold Cup can leave a mark, as we saw with last year's Gold Cup, Braveman's Game and Galloping Deschamps getting beaten subsequently. But that caught my eye. And the other, I suppose, significant storyline that's going to be through all of Aintree, of course, is the Trainers' Championship. And we open with a statement of intent, really, because the five that are declared for the manifesto, okay, there's Blow Your Wad and Colonel Harry, but there's Ginny's Destiny for Nichols, Grey Dawning for Dan Skelton, and Nilete Tomp for Willie Mullins. And that'll really set the tone for what will be an interesting 3 days.
I thought Grey Dawning would be very, very difficult to beat in these conditions. If it turns into a real test of stamina, that would surely play against Nilete Tomp. And I would have thought that the softer the ground, the better for Grey Dawning against these two opponents.
Yeah, it's round three for Ginny's Destiny and himself. So look, tactics are obviously interesting there. And then there are eight declared for the Aintree hurdle. Bob Olinger, of course, skipped Cheltenham to come here. So he's coming here fresh horse. Empire Pass skipped Cheltenham. In hindsight, I venture to think that he may well have gone very close in the champion hurdle as it transpired. Marie's Rock, you mentioned the stable form, but she's a very good mare. And Langer Dan, an interesting curveball from a handicap company into this grade one.
Yes, indeed. And Dan Skelton did suggest that on this podcast a few weeks ago, that's what he'd like to do. He'd like to run him in grade one company. So Skelton throwing everything at this, Nichols throwing everything at this, Mullins throwing everything at this. And it's unsurprising after yesterday's comments on this podcast from Paul Byrne that Meeting of the Waters has been so well backed for the Grand National. In a moment, though, you'll hear one of Willie Mullins' rival trainers suggest that another one of his horses simply has to turn up and stand up to win this year's race. Let's hear from that man now. He's Martin Brassel, and he's got two potential runners in the race, the man who won the race in 2006 with number six, Val Buddy. They are In Those Colours, Desert Moor House, and also Panda Boy. Panda Boy's guaranteed a run. Desert Moor House isn't guaranteed a run. He's 37 at the moment, so he needs a couple to come out. And that's where Martin and I began the conversation, with me suggesting that given Desert Moor House's pedigree and profile, he'd be very anxious to get him a run.
Well, I was hoping he would. The Irish National was his plan, and didn't work out. The ground was heavy, but I'm not so sure. Like, I know what you've read there on pedigrees, but I'm not so sure that he'd want it that soft. He'll handle soft ground all right, but he's a nice, easy action horse and gets over the ground quite easily. But he ticks lots of boxes for me. I know he's a novice, but he was always just a very solid horse from the first stage up the fence for me. And Dennis Lee had him as a point horse, didn't run him until he was six, and I'd say had lots and lots of jumping done with him, so I didn't have much schooling to do with him. He knew what he was doing when I had him. So it's a pity now that weather and reduction in numbers are kind of look like squeezing him out of a chance of taking part.
So if in the next couple of days it did look as though he was going to get a run, you'd give him a squeak?
I would. He's mentally, he's the right horse for the race. You could put him anywhere in a race. He's a very sound jumper, loves what he does, very honest. So I don't think the rough and tumble of the race would cause him any worries. And... sure, look good. has six less in it this year, and I'm sure they'll be well sorted out after jumping a few, and he'll be able to fight his corner over the first three or four where he needs to, and then get into a position where he can tag along there. And the step up from 3 miles is something I've been looking forward to with him for a long time, so I'm hoping that I'm right about that.
I presume if he does get a run, I presume Ricky Doyle will be on him and JJ Slevin on Panda Boy.
That's right, yeah. Both of them. They've been riding them all winter there, so they know both of them very well and get on great with them.
And people will be shouting, come on, cut to the chase, get to the one that is going to run, and people have been backing Panda Boy. Is there any concern with him that the ground might be a little bit too soft or not?
Up to last year, I would have said yes, but he was a slow maturing horse, and he's ran now on quite soft ground in the Paddy Power, ran an absolute stormer at that, and then he ran in a hurdle race there at the Racing Dublin Racing Festival, and he ran very well in that. So he seemed to handle the ground really well, stayed really well, it didn't just catch him out in any way. So we've just felt that with another year under his belt, he's just handling those conditions much better.
If there was a horse in the race that you would like to be transferred to your care before the Grand National that isn't in it at the moment, who would it be?
I am Maximus. I think he only has to jump round. Class horse in the race, Irish National winner as a novice. Would the Bobby Joe beat a horse that's well fancied in Vanillier, beat him as far as he wants to? And I think if he jumps around and keeps out of trouble, he'd be the one for me anyway.
Well, all the very best to Martin Brassel, and I hope whatever happens this weekend makes him feel a little bit better. Jane, he needs a couple to come out with Desert Moor House. Panda Boy's is more obvious one, but I thought the most interesting remark was his remark about I Am Maximus.
Yeah, I know he's the class horse of the race, but I'm just not convinced about his jumping and how deliberate he can be and how much time he spends in the air. And he's got enough weight at 11.5, but he's the Irish National winner. But you're talking about class horses. Manila Indo is in there, Cork Rambler. So
yeah.
I think it's conflated,
officially the class horse of the race, isn't he?
Yeah, but he's got the weight to match it. But I really respect Martin's opinion, and if that's what he thinks, that's what he thinks. But I think he has a serious chance in his own regard. I think Panda Boy, who followed home Meeting of the Waters in the Paddy Power, he'll relish these what are likely to be attritional conditions. He had a run over hurdles last time, a formula that has often been executed before Grand National Glory. And yeah, I felt for Martin when Faster Slow exited the Gold Cup early, and wouldn't this be quite the redemption?
Marco.
There was a little bit of confusion this morning about where Conflated was going to run. Of course, he's heading the weights for the Grand National, which is why, Jane, I brought him up earlier. Eddie O'Leary is multitasking at the moment, but he can give me 30 seconds. Eddie, looks like Conflated is going to run Friday now in the Melling Chase 2.5.
I'd say that's the preferred route at the moment, Nick. We're a bit concerned about getting the trip on heavy ground.
Okay. All right. So, but would all the others that are currently in the Jigginstown Silks run in the National?
Those are in, though. So I would assume we'll have four in it.
Okay.
All going well.
Okay. And who do you feel strongest about at the moment?
Probably a few at the bottom, like Mr. Incredible and those.
No, but
which aren't ours.
But which one of yours, though?
Listen, Delta Workman would obviously like the ground and touch wood, but like he missed his cross country, which was a prep for the race. But he loved the ground, and so Cocoa Beach loved the ground. But Cocoa wouldn't be. We don't believe he's good enough to carry off the rating he's running under.
All right, that was Eddie O'Leary on Conflated, an unlikely runner that might let Kitty's Light in. There's all sorts of debates and arguments, Jane, at this time of year, whether there's 40 runners with reserves, 34 runners with no reserves, about horses that you feel should get in who haven't, and horses who are in the race who shouldn't be in the race. What's your world view on that?
Well, I think last year, when we had a full field of 40, were we considering that there mightn't be a full field, that we were worrying the race wouldn't fill? So we're on the opposite side of that coin now. there are horses in here that have no form this season, and people will say, well, really, should that horse be allowed to run? But as it is, it's the highest rated horses that get to run, and that's it. But that's always been the way. And unless the hierarchy feel that there needs to be a change, I could see a very funny result this year, given the ground. You know, Cocoa Beach pulled up in the race last year, but he loved these type of conditions. You could get a curveball result that would justify the qualification for the race remaining the way it is, as opposed to recent form. So
there's always a slightly sinking feeling when you see some horse that you know wouldn't stay the trip in a horse box and hasn't been in any sort of form, but has a high rating from old sort of 2 mile form or 2.5 mile form from 3 years ago, making the race at the expense of a progressive, honest staying handicapper who you think's absolutely made for the race. But it was ever thus, and it was that way when there were 40 runners with reserves, it was that way when there were 40 runners without reserves, and it's that way now there are 34 runners, and that isn't going to change.
But you have to qualify now by running over an extended trip and placing, so they have a contingency in there.
Yeah, so there is that. But as we all know, you quite a lot of these horses, you can find them having managed to complete a four-runner race, a small field grade two, whatever, and over a distance, they're not really safe. But that's by the by. I never forget doing the parade for the Grand National a few years ago, and one of those Fergus Wilson horses, Serium, who was a sort of back class horse but had been for Paul Nicholls years before, and I said, it's a disgrace this horse is running, he should have been dropped way more by the handicapper, he's just depriving someone with a proper chance of a go in the Grand National. And I got very high and mighty about it, and of course the horse came there absolutely swinging on the bridle two out and ended up finishing a brilliant fifth. So since then I've decided to keep my mouth shut on this subject.
Yeah, look, there are plenty of examples. Monmo might be one, Balco de Flo was probably one. So, as I said, the National can throw us some curveballs. And when the ground is going to likely be as it is this year, I would venture to say it might not just be the class that'll win home.
Right, onwards. Yesterday at Wincanton, senior rider Paddy Brennan was banned for 18 days. Trainer Fergal O'Brien fined £4,000. It was considered by the stewards that they were schooling and conditioning the runner-up in the two-mile maiden hurdle, a mare called Northern Air. They found that Paddy Brennan had not been seen to ask for timely, real and substantial effort to obtain the best possible placing. This is the maximum penalty in this particular bracket. Just to clarify, the stewards, senior steward Tom Everts from the BHA clarified that this was not an offence regarding a non-trier. It was an offence as regards schooling in public. So earlier today, at the crack of dawn, I spoke to Paddy Brennan, and this is what he had to say.
Look, it's not a lot I can say at the minute. I've got to speak to Rory McNeice, got to speak to Fergal, but it's not what I accept. It's what I've got to do moving forward.
Okay, and so what have you got to do moving forward?
Got to try and clear my name. I've never been done for schooling in public before. Watching it, yeah, it probably doesn't look brilliant, but the issue you get with my experience is you're trying to do what's best for the horse at that time, and she raced very keenly. I reported that she made a noise, and a lot of that they thought wasn't acceptable for the performance. So it's just stuff like that I got to go through.
I mean, I suppose from a public point of view, it's a question of, right, if I back this horse, and it's not as though she was a sort of 50-1 shot, or whatever, she was 5-1, so she was sort of there with a chance according to the market. If I back this horse, do I feel that she's been given every opportunity to go and win the race? And I suppose that's something that the stewards have adjudicated on. What's your perspective on that?
Yeah, that was the key point, really. The question you got to ask yourself is, did she finish in the best possible position? I honestly think she did. And the more you watch the replay, Jordan Naylor on the winner, he's easing down from a half furlong to go. It looks like I'm finishing well, but for to turn it around and say I would have beaten him is a question that I wanted answering, and they took the view that it was schooling in public. So yeah, look, we've got to have a look at it again and see what we're going to do.
And if said horse had been at a different stage of her career, would you have ridden her differently?
If it hadn't happened what happened at Newbury, as in she raced so freely and she finished so badly, and I ride her out a lot at home, and like I say, you know, maybe you get a bit complacent as a jockey. You know, you are riding to please people a bit. You're riding to please keyboard warriors. You're riding to please, you know, punters. And sometimes, you know, that's not on my mind. My mind is to do what's best for that horse at that time. And yes, the stewards, the BHA, they have a job to do. And, you know, they did yesterday. So there you go.
What they've found you guilty of is a misjudgment, albeit a fairly grave misjudgment, rather than anything more sinister than that. While there will be people saying, oh, look at him, he's clearly trying not to win, can you lay to rest any concerns on the latter?
Yeah, I think anyone that knows me for a number of years, that's, there's always only one thing on my mind, is to win. Never been done for schooling in public or anything like that for 25 years of my career. So yeah, I'd be disappointed and disgusted if anyone thought I was doing that.
So it sounds as though an appeal is possible.
I just think, yeah, like, it's at the end of the day, Fergal's got a £4,000 fine. I've got an 18-day ban. You know, at the end of the day, we got to look into all that. It's the harsher end, and you know, we will have a look. Maybe a penalty of some description if they want to go down that road. But I think we got treated quite badly.
It's not going to be lost on anyone that you've already sort of said, well, we're in the later stages of the late autumn of your riding career before other things take over, and this long ban, is it gonna force your hand effectively?
I don't think so. You know, I just, yeah, I feel got to get this ban out of the way, got to make decisions. It'll give me and my family time to reflect. We'll probably go abroad for a couple of weeks, something I've never done in my life. And yeah, we'll see how that goes.
Okay. And then, because it would be a bad note on which to bow out, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I would. It's definitely changed things a little bit, but like we said at the start of the call, there's lots of things to consider in the next 24 hours. That's one of them. So we'll have it, think about it. But I don't want to go out of that, because at the end of the day, if I've got to serve time for something the stewards or the BHA wasn't happy with, I don't want it to end like that. Definitely not.
No, sure. And is there any possibility, do you think, of a good winner or two at Aintree this weekend?
Oh, I'd love a winner at Aintree. It's an unbelievable meeting. You know, it's Cheltenham or Aintree better. They're both fantastic meetings, but I've got a very good ride in the bumper there. Triply Flyer, as long as the ground's not too soft, I think he's got a massive chance.
Okay, that was Paddy Brennan speaking to me at crack of dawn this morning. First things first, plenty of people suggested that Connections wouldn't come forward and speak. Paddy has been happy to speak on this. And you got quite a good glimpse there of the internal dilemma that he faced. There seemed to be, Jane, to me, an acceptance there that it didn't look great, and you know, censure wasn't entirely unreasonable. I suppose length of penalty might be something that they try to get reduced.
Yeah, he mentioned Cleary's name, Nick. That's probably a mark against his name that he doesn't want there. Just for clarification as well, Northern Air contested a point-to-point, ran in Newbury, and this was effectively her third run. She was keen, I did watch it back, and she was ridden very patiently, and she finished very strong. So I can absolutely see why the stewards took their view. I can also see why Connections are considering their options. But ultimately, I don't know if there's much to be gained if they're appealing the actual penalty or if they're appealing the decision. It sounds like it might be the severity rather than the actual judgment.
And the reason it's at the upper end is because of the consequences, because not because of the nature of the action, but because of the potential consequences, because the horse finished second. So therefore, at the much sharper end of the race and much more meaningful for the betting public than if the horse had finished seventh or eighth.
Paddy's a senior rider as well. There's no point in saying that he got his fractions wrong or his timings wrong. Paddy's a very seasoned rider, so you expect all those things to be reliable. And I'll be interested to see what they decide to do. But he mentioned his chance, best chance at Aintree was in the bumper.
Mm.
Does that throw cold water over Di Sardinos?
And he clearly addressed there, Jane, the issue of retirement and impending retirement. And he clearly doesn't want to go out on a ban. Were he to win, however, at Aintree, do you think he might reconsider that?
I think if he got a big winner and he wants to go out of the top, that's the way to do it. Nobody is going to remember that there was a ban. Absolutely, in the fullness of time, nobody's going to remember that in 6 months' time. So if that's something that he's considering, I'd imagine it'll be very, very tempting.
Prize money, prize money, prize money. It's all anyone seems to want to talk about. Last week, there was a significant question about exactly how good the levels of Irish prize money are this flat season. And yesterday, once again, we heard about a prize money drop from the Jockey Club, which came as a bit of a bombshell dropped, though news of that did appear to be rather eclipsed by the Kevin Blake debate on Sky News. So nicely timed on that score. However, there is a view from the sideline that suggests that all is not doom and gloom. And indeed, are we shorting our own stock as regards constant talk of how bad British prize money is? That's certainly the opinion of Tattersall's marketing director, Jimmy George, who joins me today not necessarily as a tribune of his own organisation, but rather as frustrated from Newmarket. Jimmy, tell me why.
That's a great introduction, Nick. Now, I guess it comes on the back of a lot of the initiatives that Tattersalls have tried to do over the past few years, starting with the £25,000 Tattersalls October Book One bonus scheme. Now, our thinking with that scheme was to significantly boost prize money in a sector of the racing programme, which I think we can all identify as being less competitive with our European counterparts than we would like it to be. So to add £25,000 to win prize money in Class 4 and better, two-year-old maidens and novices, is massive. And in the 7 or so years that we've been doing it, there's been the thick end of £8 million in prize money, in bonus prize money, that's gone direct to the owners. And that is, we know from the feedback, it makes a massive difference. But whilst we were looking at the rationale for putting schemes like that together, you also end up looking at prize money that is available in other sectors of the calendar and sectors of the racing programme. And I thought it was very interesting the other day when Johnny Murta drew attention to levels of prize money in Ireland in certain sectors. And, you know, without wishing to, you know, poke fingers or point fingers at any other racing jurisdiction, he's quite right. And what I think I would love everybody to be more aware of is that for a good horse in Europe, and when I say good horse, I mean a horse capable of competing at listed or group level, there is actually no better place to compete than in Britain. There are, of the 24 most valuable Group 1 races in Europe, 18 of them a run in Britain. And it's even more stark at Group 2 and Group 3 level, where 19 of the 20 most valuable Group 2 races in Britain, Ireland or France are in Britain. So, which is, I think, something that, you know, perhaps is not widely recognised at times.
So where is the problem? I suppose the problem lies more in what is just below that top tier. And that is the sort of sweet spot for the export market, isn't it? Horses who are maybe just on the cusp of being decent stakes performers, but not quite there yet. And the temptation to then pull the lever is just too great. So is there anything that we could or should be doing in that area? Or do you think we're better off just concentrating our resources at the top end, as we appear to be edging towards doing?
Yeah, I think it's important to try and get a balance in the distribution of prize money. And again, that sort of you know, takes me back to the way that Tattersalls have tried to support maidens in particular, and we've added 10 £40,000 maiden stroke novice races to our sponsorship portfolio as part of the EBF Godolphin Judmont inspired initiative that began last year. So again, you know, maidens I think are massively important too, and there are genuinely a big number of opportunities out there for British owners in that sector now. The initiatives that the, as I say, the aforementioned teams began last year, that's up to 84 maiden and novice races, not all for two-year-olds either. I think 84 is the correct figure, of which we sponsored 10. Now, the minimum prize money for those is £30,000. That's big money. It's big money in terms of maiden prize money. And I saw an advertisement from the French Racing and Breeding Committee in a publication the other day, proudly trumpeting that they had 19 maidens in France this year worth €50,000, which is great. But there's 84 in this country that are worth £30,000 or more. You know, and £40,000 is worth not a million miles off €50,000. You see what I mean? These opportunities do exist out there, and it's just, I think that we all have a responsibility to try and get that message out there to the owners in particular, and you know, all of us professionals, you know, the trainers, the bloodstock agents, the sales companies, the, dare I say, the media. Yes, there are challenges in Britain, and obviously we saw the news regarding Jockey Club racecourses today, but in amongst that there are also some people that are working very hard in racecourses that are doing their damnedest to keep prize money as competitive as they possibly can, and they're producing races which are not only competitive but infinitely more valuable than their European counterparts in so many sectors. And again, at the risk of, you know, rattling on with too many statistics, there are three Group 3 races in Ireland this year that are worth £70,000 or more, and there are none in France, because every single Group 3 race in France is run for €80,000. Now, there are 59 in Britain this year that will be run for £70,000 or more, Group 3 races. It's a massive disparity. And I'm just, as you can tell, I just feel that sometimes we underplay our strengths, limited as they may be at times. But you do have to try to play to them at times.
Jimmy George there, Marketing Director of Tattersalls. It's probably worth mentioning that the Book One bonus that Jimmy was referring to was collected last night by Lady Lightning, who was from the first crop of Earthlight, who had the first and second in said race at Wolverhampton. And she got £5,000 GBB as well, and over £5,000 in prize money. So the owners have got £35,000 for the win. So 25 Book One bonus, £5,000 GBB, and £5,000 prize money. And she cost £30,000 for High Flyer Bloodstock and Ed Dunlop. And I think I read that High Flyer Bloodstock, Anthony Bromley, four individual two-year-old winners already this year, which is pretty remarkable. And those Book One bonuses now total over £8 million paid out since their inception. So, Jane Mangan, some interesting debating points there thrown up by Jimmy George as regards prize money and perhaps a feeling that British racing sometimes is shorting its own stock by sort of a broad brush assertion that its prize money is crap, particularly relative to its European counterparts. Does he have a point?
He has a point, yeah. I think we all, press and public and everybody gets caught up in negative press and negative talk, and talking about prize money levels is almost, you know, along with the weather, it's definitely second in the most discussed thing in racing. As for prize money levels at the highest level, I don't hear too many people complaining about, you know, Group 1 level prize money, probably because I'm not at that level. But to a secondary point, I don't think comparing jurisdictions where we're probably not where we should be and saying, oh, one compares favourable to the other is good enough. I think none of us are really at the level we want to be. I was watching Leopardstown on Sunday, and you know, the Group Three Red Rocks first prize, 32 grand to the winner. The Priory Bell that Lilac Rolla won, 32 grand to the winner, and the Ballysacks, which is supposed to be probably the most prestigious race, 29,500 to the winner. Like, that's just simply not good enough. And to a certain degree, particularly on the flat, you have incentives like the GBB bonus, you have EBF, you have Tatterstalls with their Book One bonuses, you have Goffs with their 50 grand maidens and their Goffs millions and Ballyhane and all of that are their incentives, but they're kind of putting a band-aid on bleeding, because they're not core prize money. They're not, you know, sponsorship to a greater degree. So while it's definitely helping the situation, and Jimmy rightly points out that Tattersalls are getting behind to support British prize money and of course Irish as well, I think that is masking the greater, bigger picture, which is our prize money across the board, whether you compare it to Britain or Ireland or France, it's not where it should be, and it's not where we want it to be.
In amongst all the entry chat on yesterday's show, I did flag up that one of the star performers anywhere in the world over the weekend was a horse called Notable Speech, who's trained for Godolphin by Charlie Appleby, and made it 3 from 3 at Kempton over the weekend. He produced what appeared to be a blistering turn of foot to win the race very tidily, beating some fair calibre opposition. So let's actually try and assess what the horse achieved and whether he's a genuine classic contender as we wheel in Dan Barber for the Timeform Perspective this week. Dan, so hard really to know how good this horse is, but you've got A, some historical context, and B, some numbers that might give us an idea.
Yeah, so sectionals power in this, lads. You know, there's always the question about how it will translate, showing that burst of pace on our weather, and how it will switch over to the demands of a Guineas at Newmarket on turf. And bear in mind, Notable Speech has had 3 starts in his career, and they've all been on Kempton's artificial surface, not one on grass yet. But the sectionals were punchy, to say the least. And he's vaulted himself from about 18th or 19th on the list in terms of time form ratings for the Guineas, right up to number 3. Horses with 2-year-old form of the calibre of Rosalian, for instance, he's vaulted his way up with a £10 sectional upgrade for the position he came from in a slowly run race. Bear in mind, the time figure was only 82. We've got him running to 119. The finishing speed was 111%. It was rapid from him later on. It was the performance of a high-class horse, which I think you could see visually as well. But when you then contextualise it and see where he stands now, compared to the likes of City of Troy and Henry Longfellow, they're the only two horses in the Guineas field ahead of him on time form ratings now. You do get some wider perspectives just to what a notable performance that was from what otherwise might just have been deemed a fairly run-of-the-mill all-weather rider event.
And in terms of translating all-weather form to the Guineas, is there historical precedent to suggest that it's no worry if a horse has only ever run on a synthetic surface? We've got the same issue with Carl Burke's Night Raider.
Yeah. These things tend to be slightly cyclical, don't they? So if we go back, in total, there have been 9 Guineas winners that have raced on all weather prior to the Guineas. Most of them, in fact, 8 of the 9, ran on them as a 2-year-old, not as a 3-year-old. That includes Ganati, who almost felt like a changing of the tide when that horse won the Guineas on its 3rd start, having won twice on all weather previously and winning on the 2nd occasion. I think there was a mood, wasn't there, that, oh, this may be the future, this may be how horses are prepped for the Guineas now, because a horse has done it in this slightly different manner to what we used to. And the other notable one in recent times, which was an element of circumstance, I'm sure you remember, Nick, was Kamiko, who won the 2000 on his 5th start, sort of a battle-hardened 2-year-old. But he happened to win at Newcastle on his final outing in the old Racing Post Trophy, merely because, can't remember why Doncaster was out of action, but presumably abandoned due to weather, but it was switched from there. So they're 2 of the probably most notable ones. out of the nine that have done it this century have raced on all weather. So it's possible, but actually I don't think the numbers tell us anything punchy either way. But he can actually tap into the Derby, if you'd allow me to expand on that too.
Go for it.
Yeah, 11, I thought it's quite striking. So since 2000, and we'll include Irish Derbies as well, 11 Derby or Oaks winners have raced on the all-weather prior to their win. And I'd say it would feel a less likely prep for a Derby horse. We associate them with a trial on turf. We associate them with runs in races like, say, a Dewhurst or a... Again, the old Racing Post Trophy on their final start, the Futurity, as it is now. But the two names that stood out to me, Massar, of course, Godolphin's horse. His sixth start was in Maidan. So his was hardly a, we're going to prep this horse on our weather. It just seemed to happen. He ran on the dirt in Maidan. But I'd say the most notable who did it was Jack Hobbs, going back to making a successful debut on our weather at Wolverhampton. And on his sixth start as well, he ended up winning an Irish Derby. So they're interesting numbers. I'm not sure that that's telling. I'm not sure one says that a horse can't do it or says that a horse will be advantaged by having prepped on our weather. I think you take a lot of them on their merits in the sense that, well, has he got the tools based on what he's shown and based on his pedigree to adapt? But that might be the concern with this impressive Godolphin winner at the weekend. Just how will that turn of pace carry over to what at this stage might end up being a testing ground guineas?
All right, round the world with our friends at Weatherbees, round the bloodstock world, and to a man in South Africa today, described in my notes as one hell of a bloodstock agent. Indeed, his CV reads extremely well. Horses that you'll be familiar with wherever you follow Thoroughbred Racing: Iridescence, Victory Moon, Right Approach, Archipenko, Hawam, Versing, Getrix, Trippy, Mubtahij. We're just approaching now the National Yearling Sale in Johannesburg, 18th and 19th of April. He will be extremely well represented there in a variety of capacities, most notably as a consultant to the Slack Farms, Maritzfontein and Wilgebusch Drift and their stallions, particularly those you'll see in the Weatherby Stallion book. Drum roll, please. I am, of course, talking to Jahan Malherbe. Jahan, nice to talk to you.
Well, that was a great introduction, Nick. I'm very honoured.
Well, that's at least I'm good at something. Which bit of that introduction do you feel most at home with? A buyer of horses, a manager of horses, someone developing stud farms, someone you'll see at the sales? Where do you feel at your most peaceful and comfortable in the world?
That's a tricky question. I mean, they're all things I do. I think the one that gives most satisfaction is buying a good horse for a client. That's probably the most rewarding, because it's pretty tough out there. A lot of experts doing it, and you know, to so-called beat them is always a great thrill.
I mean, everyone's always asked. It's a boring question, but I'll just spin it off straight away. Which has been the most satisfying purchase so far?
I would say a filly called Ilha de Vitoria that I brought out of Brazil for Mary Slack, because it cemented my relationship with the Slack family. She went on to be multiple Grade 1 winner and Horse of the Year, and has founded a dynasty on the farm as a broodmare. So that's been very rewarding, and from a personal perspective, you know, with people I'm really close to.
We feature quite a bit of South African racing and bloodstock in this segment. Just for those who aren't familiar, tell us the importance of Mary Slack, the Slack family, the Oppenheimer family, to South African racing and bloodstock, and where the farms are at now.
Okay, well, originally, Harry Oppenheimer and his wife Bridget started Maritzfontein Stud in Kimberley. That was back in 1945. And they imported a number of top stallions from England, Wilwyn being one that became champion sire here. Fort Wood later, in later years. Mm-hmm. And they sort of, one of the leading farms in South Africa over the years. They in fact bred 14 winners of the South African Oaks, which I think is probably a world record for any one farm to breed 14 Oaks winners. And obviously it's now taken over by Jessica, the granddaughter, and Mary's got her own place at a place called Wilgebusch Drift out in the Western Cape. The two of them have been champion breeders, and they're currently leading the breeders' log as we speak right now for this season. So, you know, really top breeders, top owners. They own horses, they buy horses worldwide, and they race in England, they race in Ireland, they race in America, And really, I don't know where racing would be without them. When Pumalela got into financial trouble, that's the operating company back 5 years ago, and it needed a cash injection for racing to sustain itself in South Africa, the family stepped up to the plate. So we probably wouldn't be racing without them if you really want to know how important they are.
Well, that gives us tremendous context. I'm quite interested in the stallions that are being stood now as well. Digital Age by Invincible Spirit, who's retired to stud 2 years ago, and you've already had some significant results from Danon Platina, who's by Deep Impact, not exactly an easy stallion line to get into wherever you are in the world. How did that come about, and what results are being yielded?
We were offered Danon Platina, a lady called Satomi, who operates in Australia actually, but is of Japanese descent, and the English agent for Japan. She offered, I couldn't believe we were being offered a champion two-year-old in Japan, and we all know how strong Japanese racing is. We all know how fantastic Deep Impact is. So to get offered a champion son of his, we leapt at it. It wasn't easy to get him here. There were no protocols between Japan and South Africa, so he had a long ride via Europe, but we're quite used to these long rides living in Africa. No one trades with us easily, but we managed to secure him, and he's off to a flying start.
Just tell me a little bit more about the what his progeny are showing to you.
Well, he surprisingly showed a lot of early speed. His first crop are only three now, and now starting to go classic trips. And starting to win a lot of races. He was just touched off his freshman side with his two-year-old crop in terms of number of winners by Lancaster Bomber, who one would have expected to be a little more precocious. Sadly, Lancaster Bomber is no longer with us, but, you know, Danon he's got four or five very good horses. He had a filly that just got touched off Saturday in the Group 2. And he's made a very promising start. I think they're going to be stayers. I think he's going to bring stamina to the party, which is something we can surely deal with in South Africa. And it looks very exciting.
And the other horse we were talking about, Digital Age, he little bit newer. Similar type of horse or offering something different?
He's by Invincible Spirit. He's a sprinter miler. He was bought by Klarovich Stables at the Tattersall Sales and for Chad Brown and taken to the States, where he won a Group 2 and a Group 1. And he, unfortunately for him, damaged his hock very badly, which terminated his career prematurely, and we were able to secure him. He had a few veterinary issues, and not everyone was prepared to take the gamble, but my team were. And it's paid dividends. He covered well over 100 mares in his first crop and went swimmingly. He's been very well received.
This is smart stuff, and clearly producing some smart stuff as well. In terms of the recent developments as regards releasing the restrictions on movement of horses in and out of South Africa, how much bigger is that going to make South Africa as a racing nation, do you think?
I think it's going to be a game changer. You know, you go back a few years when Mike de Kock could get his horses out, and he became a dominant force in Dubai. He was really the only person giving Godolphin a run for their money. Since he hasn't been able to get his horses there, he basically just threw up his hands in despair and stopped. You know, things just... Even Dubai racing's not as strong, I feel. Certainly the carnival is not what it used to be without Mike de Kock and South African horses. And the fact that we now can get back in, I think is going to be fantastic. And obviously, our bloodstock is totally undervalued if you look at world terms. You know, we have entire yearling sales that don't gross as much money as Winx's foal brought the other day. You know, so I think people are going to realize the value, and they're going to be able to buy our horses. And certainly second-hand horses are going to be sought after. They were, and hopefully they'll be once again.
And it's been a good time for you and the Slack family on the racecourse as well, with the Group 1 computer form sprint going your way last weekend. What more can we expect of Thunderstruck?
Well, he'll go to Durban now for the Durban season. There are two Group 1 sprints there. We only have four Grade 1 sprints in South Africa during the year, so he's bagged one of them. There's two more to come, and we'll see how it goes. Unfortunately, one's a handicap, so that's not going to be easy. By now, he would be carrying top weight, but we're hopeful. And after that, he'll find a place at stud.
Jahan Malherbe there with exciting developments for South African racing. Now, the Horsepower, horsepwr.com initiative has received almost universal acclaim from across the industry. One correspondent says, I wanted to compliment the makers, drivers and instigators of this fantastic website. It is easy to view, makes a huge impact and hopefully will be a useful tool for those in the industry to refer to. An enormous amount of work has gone into this. It is a front foot campaign, but not just a campaign. It is a continuing resource for those of us in the industry to communicate better to those outside the industry what the sport does in order to look after its most valued participants. Horsepwr.com. In this week of all weeks, you do need to check it out. All right, Jane is still with me. Jane, I'm suggesting that today's not much of a harvest for a tip. You might have something for me later in the week.
It doesn't, so I'm going to head straight to Aintree on Thursday and I'm going to go for the feature race, the Aintree Hurdle. There's 8 runners, and while Bob Olinger is one that my heart might lean with, my head is telling me Ampere Pass would have gone very close in this year's Cheltenham Champion Hurdle. 2.5 miles is probably his optimum trip anyway, so I think he'll be extremely hard to beat and give Willie Mullins one of those kickstarts that he will want ahead of a big 3 days at Aintree. So Ampere Pass in the Aintree Hurdle.
Yeah, this really could decide what the rest of the season looks like, because if Mullins gets on the heels of Nichols or Skelton and or even gets ahead of one or both of them, then we're going to be in for some pretty interesting racing between the end of Aintree and the end of the year. Expect Mullins at Perth, Sandown, Ayr, Newton Abbott and all points in between. Jane, thank you very much. Thank you very much for listening. That was Tuesday, April the 9th. We'll see you again tomorrow. You've been listening to Nick Luck Daily, brought to you by Timeform, the trusted source of racing data and analysis, by the Racehorse Owners Association, and by the racing app in partnership with FitStairs.